Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland.
We'll be right back.
Mark Striegel, thanks so much for joining us. July 2020. How are you guys? Hope you're getting through the summer, staying safe, wearing your talking metal masks. If you don't have one, hit me up at mark@talkingmetal@yahoo. No, what is it? mark@talkingmetal.com. It's that simple. Hit me up there. I can send you out a talking metal mask. $18 domestic. Probably you have to do like 22 international, but would love to get these out to you. High quality masks. So would love to send you one. Definitely hit me up at mark@talkingmetal.com if you want one. You can shoot me a PayPal payment for it. I'll explain all that to you in the email. Cool. And let's do this. Let's get into a great episode. We got Gary from Maelstrom on the show with us. They got a new record of their first full length finally out. We're going to hear all about that. But first, let's hit some more music. We heard little Sean Baker Orchestra getting us into the show. Now we're going to hit some doom. Some doom. Yeah, now we're going to hit some doom. That's right. Yeah, this is Clouds of Dementia by Candlemass here on Talking Metal.
Reality was no more. Clouds of Dementia by Candlemass. We're going way back to 2009 off the Death Magic Doom record, the 10th studio album by Candlemass. Of course, the great Candlemass, Swedish doom metal masters, I would call them. And let's keep the music going. I used to be kind of friendly with these guys. They were on our TV show when we had the TV show back on the Fuse Network. They were called Swashbuckle Pirate Metal. Little thrashy pirate metal right here. Let's go back to this one. This has to go back. I don't know when this was. 2007, 2008. This is Back to the Noose by Swashbuckle Pirates via New Jersey. Ewing, New Jersey, if I remember correctly. Further ado, let's get into the interview with Gary from Maelstrom. We'll start it off with a little music and ancient art sample, if you will, of that song from the new Maelstrom record, and then we'll hear from Gary from Maelstrom. We'll be right back. it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and checking in with us, it's been a while, Gary Voskanyan from Maelstrom. How are you, Gary?
I'm great. How are you doing, Mark? Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
You bet. So your band is Maelstrom, and you guys are back with new music. The last time I spoke with you, we were in a bar in Midtown. I think it was 2008. And at that point, you had just released new music for the first time in many, many years. And here we are in 2020. And you guys finally have a full length released. So I want to start there. Let's talk about the new album, and then we'll go back and trace some of the history. Can you tell us a little bit about the new album, the name of it, for example?
Absolutely. The album is called Of Gods and Men. And we have to do a little bit of the history for me to tell you about the new album, because the reality of it is
absolutely,
we're still milking the same 10 songs since 1988, man. So,
yeah, because I was going to say the EP that came out in 2008, there's a lot of the, how many of the same songs are on the new album?
All three.
Okay.
But they're all revisionist kind of tracks. They're basically, they've all been tooled even a little bit further. Basically, Joey and I kind of tweak and retool and remove, you know, reassess, have all of these songs multiple times at this point. Now we're finally at the point where, you know, in our heads and in our hearts, they're at the point where we wanted them to be,
okay,
and the vision that we had for them 32 years ago.
Right. The vision's been going on for a long time, right?
Yeah. But now we're finally at the point where we can kind of say, okay, this is it. This is really what we wanted. And not only are we committing this to their final, to their final iteration, but also, you know, out to the universe as our vision of that creation that started all those decades ago.
Okay. That's
where we're at.
So let's talk about the history then, and we'll then kind of circle back to the album Of God and Men. The band, what's that?
Plural, gods.
Oh, gods. I'm sorry. Of God. Let me take it again.
All right.
Okay, so let's talk about the history then, and then we'll circle back to the new album Of Gods and Men. And this is something that you mentioned has been going on for a long time. The band started, and you guys did some demos. And the demos became, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of hot commodities on the tape trading circuit. Back in the day, for anyone, most of my listeners, I think, know, but we used to trade tapes back and forth. We'd get bands that weren't signed, and you'd dub the tapes, and you'd send them to your friend across the country, or dub them for your friend, you know, who you went to high school with, and stuff kind of spread that way. So the band's original, two demos did pretty well in that kind of underground circuit, correct?
That's absolutely correct. Yes. Our first demo was cut in 1989. We started in late 1988 is when we officially started. And by mid-89, we had our first demo out, which really was, you know, kind of untitled, just, you know, you could say it's just Mouse from demo 89 kind of thing. And it did fairly well. It was pretty raw. It was definitely, you know, a kid's first attempt at getting into a multi-track studio and making something happen. I think at the time, I think we thought a lot more of it than its reality. But it definitely got us, it got us some recognition. It got us noticed, and it definitely started to circulate. Along with that, we were making a name for ourselves in the local underground scene, you know, playing the places, you know, out on Long Island, like, you know, on February's, which was a, you know, if you're familiar with that at all, it was sort of like Long Island's version of CBGB's, where the metal bands.
I've never been there, but I heard of it. Yep.
Yeah, you know, and you know, a lot of bands played there and kind of cut their teeth there. Dream Theater, Twisted Sister, all sort of got their start over there, and then you know, on the local scene, ourselves and Cold Steel, Cronin, some of the other, you know, local bands that started to get, you know, noticed during those years too. Also, like I said, we will cut our teeth at that place. And then we wound up getting a very big local following over there. There were nights where we were putting, you know, 200 plus in there. And then one night we played with Cold Steel and Demolition Hammer there and broke every record the place had ever seen. And, you know, it was a kind of place that, you know, max occupancy, legal occupancy, I think was somewhere around 74 or something like that. And, you know, us, Demolition Hammer and Cold Steel pushed almost 500 people in the place. So, you know, it was
wow.
It was a fire marshal, you know, extravaganza at that point in time. So, but I mean, you know, it was amazing. You know, the underground scene yeah. back then was, you know, in the late '80s, early '90s was really a great, you know, it was a great place to be. And there was just a lot of action going on. It was a lot of fun. And then as we started to get bigger, you know, we started to get some opening gigs over at Sundance, which was a lot bigger a place. And, you know, we played with bands such as Watchtower, Atheist, Candlemass, you know, those guys.
Right.
And the second tape, by 91, when we pushed out the second tape, which is called This Battle to Make History, Yet History Never Comes, that sort of got us, I guess you could say, sort of a cultish following in the underground. It circulated well. It got really known, not just here, but also over in Europe and South America. It became kind of, like you said, a hot commodity. And it was well produced, and it had really nice packaging. And, you know, we sort of went the whole nine with that. And we had done, you know, we also had developed tremendously, both as musicians, but also as studio musicians. And we were guided a lot by the guy who recorded it, who was a guy named Greg Marchek. And he helped us quite a bit with the actual recording process. And really, it was a leaps and bounds better situation for us, both as well as songwriting, as musicians, and as recording artists and production and the production aspect. So it really started to get us noticed. We started charting in like Metal Force. You remember Metal Force's magazine?
Of course,
they had
yeah.
like a reader's demo chart. So we started charting in that. We were getting picked up on the radio stations that played this kind of stuff overseas, like Portugal and Spain and some other parts of Europe were starting to play this pretty regularly on their radio stations. And it was going really well for ourselves. If you recall, also back then, there was a guy named Richard C. from a company called Wild Rags Records. And he owned a record company and a record store over in California. And what had happened was he gave us some good advice, and we had developed a really strong mailing list. You know, back then it was real mailers. You know, we had to do real mailing, and we had developed a real strong mailing list local, because we put a lot of people in the local venues. So we had a strong mailing list that helped support that. So we traded our mailing list with Richard, along with his mailing list for the magazines. And he had, I don't know, whatever, maybe 400, 500, whatever it was, fanzines. And he kind of gave us the advice was, you know, what I want you guys to do is you send a letter to all of these fanzines. You say, okay, if you want a copy of the tape, write us back and we'll send you a copy of the tape and you review it. And, you know, we'll develop a relationship or correspondence and that kind of thing. He was, you know, he had given us that advice because he didn't want us to mail out whatever it was, 500 tapes, you know, just crazy, you know, when you're 17 years old to try to do that with the money that would be involved, you know, especially sending everything to
right.
over to overseas. And, you know, and back then you were dealing also with, you were even dealing with things like, you know, that would seem extremely foreign to somebody now. But, you know, back then, like kids in Portugal, the kids in like Czechoslovakia, they weren't allowed to have this. You know, it was illegal. They could get arrested. They could get arrested for having our tapes. So, like, literally arrested for having our demo tape. So it was the level of passion that existed back then was a totally different thing. It was you know, you didn't just download something off of Spotify or you know, or a BitTorrent site and say, yeah, I heard the latest Maelstrom song. You know, these kids like died for this.
Right.
You know,
and that's something, like, you know, I've spoken about before, that there's been a whole devalue in things. I mean, for me, as a kid in the 80s, I would get on my 10 speed bike and ride way out to this independent record store, like 12 miles from my house, you know, with my paper out money. And I'd flip through that import section and the metal section. And I'd look and I'd invest in a record that I may have never heard, you know, an Agent Steel record or, you know, something like that. And then I'd ride it home.
The same thing.
I'd ride it home on my bike, you know, sweating and almost getting hit by cars on my bike. And then I'd put it on and I'd listen to it. And that, knowing how hard it was to get the record, made me dive into it and experience it so much more. And then going exactly to Spotify and clicking on something and be like, oh, okay. You know, it's like, it's like there was such, and to hear you talk about a Maelstrom tape ending up in a communist country, and you know, it was literally, you're right, it was illegal to have something like that in those countries, you know, and it really made the fans quite passionate.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, the devaluation of music as a saleable commodity is something I've written about. It's something I've talked with people about, and you know what it is, man, I get it, because I talk to people now, you know, anyone born, let's say post, you know, certainly post Napster, but for the most part, let's say post internet, you know, think that paying for media is fundamentally stupid,
right?
Like literally stupid. They're like, why would you ever pay for that? You get it for free. Why do you pay for that? It's like, well, it cost me $50,000 over the past 10 years to cut this album, you know?
Right.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
You know, and maybe there's a level of stupidity to that, but you know, I wanted to do it, and in order to do it right, and with all the heartache and hiccups and hurdles that we had to go through in order to get this done, it cost me about $50,000 to get this thing done, and now you're gonna rip it off a BitTorrent site,
right?
And tell me, you know, and tell me, you know, well, that's normal, and I get it, and it is to a certain degree, but. You know, I come from an era where you come from, man. We, you know, me and my buddy get on our bikes and go to Slipdisc with our paper route money, and rifle through 12 inches, and you know, have to decide like, all right, you know, they're all $7.98, and I want five, but I got three. You get the other two, and we'll listen to them together. And it became, and you said this word, and I'm gonna hammer on this word, possibly throughout the remainder of this interview, but I'm going to hammer on it right now. It became experiential. Okay. It was not just background filler. It was not just the latest song that you threw on. It was not just something that, you know, came in your head for 12 seconds and you just moved on again. It wasn't like that. You sat there and you took this in as an experience, the way one would go to a movie or reading a book that they were going to sit and eat, you know, 20 chapters at a clip of, you know, it wasn't, or the way somebody might binge watch, you know, an entire season of a show that they absolutely love. Listening to a record was experiential, and that, as both an art form of creation and an art form of listening to, is all but gone.
Right, right on.
And one of the reasons we wrote this record the way that we did was because of that fact. We wanted this to be an experience.
Absolutely. And it is. It sounds great. Again, we're talking about the new album. It's Of Gods and Men, and it is a great sounding record. Let's do this, Gary. Let's play a track off the record, and then I want to come back and chat with you for another, you know, 5 to 10 minutes before I let you go, because I got a couple questions I want to hit on with you. But what can we play for the Talking Metal listeners right now?
Let's assume someone hasn't heard our stuff before, or if they've heard the EP, you know, let's try and pick a track that might be a little bit different.
I don't Well, I know we played Arise back on the podcast in 2008. I don't know if we still have any listeners left from that era.
I mean, but it's a little, and Arise is a little bit retooled and a little bit different also even now. But let's take something a little bit different. Let's go with Thief of Light.
You got it. Okay, and Gary, I'll edit this together, obviously, and
a
couple more questions, but I probably do need to wrap it up in about 10 minutes max, so we'll just keep that in mind.
Dude, I was just doing one that. Am I talking too much?
No, it's fine. I just want to if there's anything that you definitely want to hit upon, we'll get it in.
I was just on one about 2 hours ago. I was on a call with a guy doing a video interview with me from Germany, and we went an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? So like, you're trying to keep it under 12. This guy was 120. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's all over the place, I guess,
Yeah. Right on. Okay. All right. Maelstrom here on Talking Metal, new music off the Gods and Men album. It is out now. We're talking with Gary. Gary, remind us, who else is in the band with you?
Well, really, Mark, it's basically just Joey and I. We had recruited a guy named Dave. So it's myself, Gary Voskanian, and Joey Lodes, who's the guitar player. He also played bass on this album. We recruited a guy named Daniel Kleffman, who cut drums for us, and another gentleman named Ed Marks, who did keyboards and helped me with some kind of tooling, some vocal passages and things like that. He also recorded my vocals. And a gentleman named Rich Lagey did all the mixing and mastering. But basically, Maelstrom is really Joey and I.
Got it. So you do the demos, then there's years of inactivity, correct?
Correct.
But yes. you do come back to it, and there's life back with the band, between at least the two of you, and you released this EP in 2008, which is the last time I interviewed you for the podcast. And then at that point, what happens?
Basically, we released the EP. During the recording of the EP session, Joey is accepted into medical school outside of the country. So once you get that call, you kind of have to go, or you lose your spot. So, and that happened literally while we were recording drums on the EP. So the EP was never an intention. The EP happened because of the fact that Joey was basically in school for another 4 years during the process. So we basically realized that the album was going to have to be shelved. There was no way we were going to cut all 10 tracks at that point. And, so during like times when he was off and back in the country, we cut the EP. During that, after the EP came out, during that time, I had two children. He had two children. He's got a third now. Jobs were changed. Careers were changed. Jobs were lost. Homes were lost due to Sandy, hurricanes. Money was good. Money was bad. Just life, life got in the way, essentially. I mean, there's a million and one excuses, but, fundamentally, there was just, even when we had it done, it still wasn't the right time for us because, we didn't have the ability to go with the PR people that we wanted to go with the radio people that we wanted to go with, the social media people that we wanted to go with, to produce the merch, you know what I'm saying? Funds just weren't right. And then, and I guess ultimately in the grand scheme of things, nothing's ever going to be perfect, but, it got shelved once again. And then basically this, Mark, this pandemic hit, and, I was home, and I was being set up to work from home from my office. And I called Joey up and I said, dude, this may be the one time in history that being a non-touring band is an advantage. And the quick explanation to that is basically, Mark, all of the big names and all of the touring acts right now had to kind of park their stuff because none of the labels want to push the album when they have, you know, when Live Nation and the other venues and the other venue holders can't let them play, you know? So you got like Lamb of God, who was supposed to hit at the same time that we're hitting right now, pushes their album back. You got dozens of big names that basically, you know, in limbo essentially because none of them can effectively tour. We really have zero intention of touring. And we looked at this and said, you know what? This is the one time in history where it might be a good thing that we're not touring.
Right.
And we literally have a captive audience, you know, unfortunately, because of all this, you got people that have been stuck in their house, like at that point, probably 80 days, you know, people are probably jonesing for something new, even though it's 30 years old, it's still new to a lot of people. And, you know, personally speaking, even though it's 32 years old, I don't feel like it sounds like it's that dated.
Right.
But
when you say 30 years old, I mean, these recordings aren't 30 years old. These songs are 30 years old.
Exactly. But the writing is 30 years old.
Right. So, let me ask you
so
this.
So basically, that was it.
Yeah. No, I hear you because like even for what I do, we've seen an uptick. I thought like, oh, wow. I wonder, you know, are people aren't going to be in their cars driving to work. No one's going to be listening to the podcast. Everyone's going to be dealing with stuff. But no, our numbers have gone way up for Talking Metal during this. And even, you know, we're doing a live video stream on Friday nights. And, you know, we had 1,100 people tune into the live stream 2 weeks ago, you know, which is incredible.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thanks. But yeah, so I do think for media in general, it's an interesting, strange time. Okay, so my question is, these songs, again, 30 years we're talking, have been a part of your life. This has been to put out an official full-length album. I mean, this has been a long time coming for you guys. How does it emotionally feel to finally put this out there to the world? I mean, it's got to be an emotional thing, I would think.
I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, it feels great. I finally did this thing that then, you know, the long and the short of it, you know, I'm an artist. I've been in advertising and commercial art for 30 plus years. I've been doing the band for 32 years now on and off. I write, you know, and I think that a lot of people that have that in them, have that creative side in them, you know, have a little bit more of, let's say, an emotional aspect towards things. Maybe they hang on to things more. Maybe that, you know, me personally speaking, I know for myself, I've had some trouble with follow through. So for me, this is finally a personal win and a little bit of a personal vindication in that I can say, yeah, you know what? I did it. I actually finished the damn thing. You know, I'll have great starts with things and then, you know, not such great follow through. But for me in that respect, you know, it's definitely a goal that I can tick off, you know, on a checklist. At the same time, there's an aspect of the fact that the real work really starts now because yeah, we put the thing out, but you know, if we want it to have legs and we want it to do something, you know, we got to nurture the baby. You know, you can't just kind of leave it for itself and let it flounder. You got to, you know, we, and that's a level never didn't see the light done because the way we wanted it to.
Okay. You're cutting out there a little bit, Gary. Yeah, the connection's been great up until about 30 seconds ago. I'm not sure. All right, folks, we were having some technical problems with Gary here, and we now have him back on the line. So, Gary, before you were breaking up, I think we were talking about just the emotions that you have releasing these songs, which you, in theory, have been working on for a good portion of your life, really. I mean, is it an emotional thing for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, of course, these things, you know, I've been sitting on for 32 years right now at this point, and, you know, different iterations, of them have been, you know, created, crafted, scrapped, reworked, redone, retooled, and now they're finally out and they're, you know, what the vision of what we anticipated, you know, as the final iteration of them. So yes, there's definitely a emotion attached to it. One of those emotions is just elation. I'm finally, you know, it's finally done and out, and, you know, to the satisfaction of Joey and I. So we're certainly happy about that. There's also the fact that a lot of the real work, Mark, starts kind of now, you know, like, although we've been working on these songs for so long and recorded some of them several times over, you know, now it's the matter of actually promoting them, getting them out to the world and, you know, and getting them heard and doing the interviews and, you know, what I'm doing right now, basically, and that kind of thing. So there's also, you know, there's still a lot of work ahead, but certainly the emotion of being extremely happy that they're out, and also just that I can kind of check that off of the life goals is a big deal because, you know, certainly something I wanted to finish in my life.
Absolutely. And another thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, since you guys have been doing this, which has been obviously a long time, 30 years, right? 30, over 30 years. I mean, we're seeing a lot of bands since, you know, let's say in the last 15 years that are coming up with these similar themes, you know, that you guys kind of had this battle themes, and now there's Viking metal and, you know, this type of stuff like that. In some ways, I feel like you guys were kind of doing that before anybody else. Thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you had bands like Omen, you had bands, of course, like Manowar. You know, I mean, I think a lot of the sword and sorcery kind of things we're always there to a certain degree, part and parcel with aspects of metal. But, you know, I think the Viking metal movement is sort of its own kind of its own thing. I certainly, you know, wouldn't want to take any level of credit for something that's certainly not part of my culture. But I think that, you know, we always keyed on even when. I was always very fantasy oriented. My influences came primarily from my mother, who was a huge, you know, Tolkien head. And I played Dungeons and Dragons when I was in, you know, like before I was 10 and that kind of thing. And I was always into that sort of stuff. And so writing fantasy-esque kind of things was always part of something I was interested in and into doing. So I'm at my parents' house right now I'm actually kind of ripping apart a lot of the house, basically, to kind of clean things out, because both of them wound up with COVID-19 pneumonia and we're in the hospital. And when they come back, I'm trying to make the place as kind of streamlined as possible. So I'm going through all of these old things. And I actually found an old Polaroid from when I was probably in fifth or sixth grade. And the shot is of me in a toga, and you know, I'm 9 at this point, basically, and I'm holding a golden lightning bolt, and I have like laced golden sandals, and I'm in a toga with bare chest, and you know, and a golden leaf, like, you know, thing around my head. You know, I'm basically, I think it was for a Greek gods report, and you know, I was doing like the Sons of Kronos, if I remember correctly, Poseidon, Zeus, and you know, Hades, and you know, so I'm looking at that and I'm like, okay, I guess there was never any question as to what the cover of my album would wind up being, you know? So I guess it was always kind of in me to do that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And now that these songs are finally out there in a full album format, of course, the album again, Of Gods and Men by Maelstrom, is there thoughts of doing new music, or is this kind of you got here, you're finally getting this full length album out, you know, we're not even thinking about the future, or are you, or is there new music down the road?
Well, I'm not going to say that it's one and done, but it, you know, it certainly could be. It might, you know, it might be. I'm 49, so maybe this is it. I'm just glad that I can check this one off.
You're young compared to a lot of these guys. I mean, there's guys out there in their 70s.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a lot of those guys also have 25 albums under their belt, or, you know, at this point.
True.
I have one, you know, I don't have 25 songs. So, but the aspect of doing anything else right at this moment new is not really where we're where our heads are at. Because like I was saying just a little while ago, the work really kind of starts now in terms of all the back end stuff, the behind the scenes kinds of things, the things that people don't go into a band thinking they're going to have to do, but, you know, is really important, you know. Everything that has to do with not writing the songs and recording the music has to get done now. And we're not a label band. We don't have a label backing. We have a lot of people in our, you know, in our mastermind unit. You know, we have a lot of really great people who the labels use themselves. And I've had a lot of support and help from I'll say guys like Al Dawson from Earache Records. He's the manager of the US version of Earache. Huge help. Guys like Dennis Clapp, who is the guy who started Spitfire Records. You know, these are guys that have helped us and advised us and kind of nurtured us along the way. And although we never signed with their label, their respective labels, they've given us a tremendous amount of advice throughout the years. And they've been really, really helpful to us in us acquiring people like Munsey from Skateboard Marketing to do radio, people like John Freeman to help us with PR, the guys that I have working on the social media end, you know, Matt from Dropout on the social media end, you know, these are all contacts that we've gotten through the guys that have helped us from the labels and stuff, you know? So, you know, right now, like I said, a lot of the real work starts really in that respect right now to get this thing out to the world. Our old bass player, John Modell, who also plays in the band Car Bomb, he just found all the recorded, all the songs we ever wrote after the second demo. And, you know, they're basement recordings, basically practice sessions, but
right.
They're there and they're recorded and now we have them. So,
wow,
you know,
okay.
So I mean, all the material that we wrote, you know, so if we ever do decide to do something else, we have a good six, you know, good six solid starts, you know,
ideas.
and they would still be 30 years old.
right. There yeah. You go.
You know, short of that, I've always wanted to do a couple of, you know, maybe like an EP of a few covers that are sort of left of center kind of things. Like, I like covers from metal bands that are things that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect from a metal band. Like I really enjoyed the one from Disturbed, you know, Sound of Silence. I really enjoyed what they did with that. We used to do a cover of Billy Joel's Pressure. So I could see us maybe doing something like that if we were to do something in the short term in the studio again. But on the long term, well, like I said, we found these other tracks. We'll see where it goes.
So there could be more.
There could be more.
Maelstrom. Yeah. Gary, it's always great talking with you. And I know it's been a while, but let's reconnect before another 12 years go by.
Yes, please. Absolutely.
Where's the
Thank
best place
so
people can reach you online? Is there a social media page? I know there's a Facebook page, right?
Yes. Well, there's absolutely a Facebook page, and that's Metal Maelstrom. Facebook, Metal Maelstrom. Bandcamp is Metal Maelstrom. Bandcamp at Metal Maelstrom. Twitter, also Metal Maelstrom. Online, it's just maelstrom.online is our main website, our home website. And, we're on Instagram, you know, basically, you know, we're relatively easy to find, although there is unfortunately plenty of other bands named Maelstrom.
Right. But
we usually use the handle Metal Maelstrom.
All right, cool. Well, we'll link some of those through the show notes on talkingrock.net and talkingmetal.com. And great speaking with you, Gary. I love hearing the stories and I'm psyched that these songs are finally seeing a full album release. We encourage everyone to go check them out on Spotify or Amazon Music or Apple Music. They're just about everywhere, right?
Yes, they are on all three of those.
Okay, awesome. Oh yeah, Gary, and before I let you go, just I hope everything goes all right with your parents. I'm so sorry that they fell ill with this disease or illness or whatever you want to call it. Are they doing okay?
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. You know, they're both now out of the hospital and into rehab. So hopefully, prayers said and fingers crossed, they'll come out of it okay. Thank you.
Good.
Yeah, some technical issues there on the interview, so I had to kind of piece it together from a few different things. I think we were on a cell phone first, and then he called me back the next day on a landline. So we made it nice. We edited it all together. I thought at one point he was telling me during the interview what song to play, but I couldn't find that, and maybe that was in part of the interview that I had to edit out because the quality was so bad. I don't really know, but hopefully I'm playing the right songs. This is a song I love. This is Arise by Maelstrom.
Thank you.
guys, we're going to do it right there. We're going to leave it. We're going to cut it. We're going to stop this nonsense, the Talking Metal podcast, and we will be back real soon. This is Overthrow by Forbidden to take us out.